All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are taking a little bit of a deeper dive into the Falcons salary cap situation now that we have a little bit more details on the massive $150 million deal that Matt Ryan signed this past week.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet. And of course, you can find me on Twitter, at FalcFans. And, of course, I host this amazing, illustrious, magnanimous Locked on Falcons podcast. So, guys, today I'm going to correct some bad information, a bad take. Oh, my God, the world is ending because Aaron had a bad take. On Friday's episode, I gave you guys some bad information, some bad intel about the Falcons salary cap situation because I forgot to factor in the top 51 rule that governs all roster and salary cap situations during the offseason. And I will explain what that top 51 rule is as I explain that. And we'll talk a little bit more about sort of Matt Ryan's contract now that we have a few more details and sort of what it means for the Falcons salary cap situation, what it means for their roster situation, things that I talked about on this past Friday's episode, and we'll touch upon those things again now that we have a little bit more information. So let's talk about where I got things wrong. And I got things wrong in terms of I did not factor in the top 51 rule, which you guys may or may not know, is the rule that indicates that teams only count the top 51 players towards their salary cap during the offseason. So from the end of the season until the start of the regular season, you only count the top 51 players on your roster. That's why your teams are able to fit 90 guys under their salary cap, which they carry in the training camp, because 49 of those or 39 of those players don't count towards the salary cap. And it allows you to have a full training camp roster without having to worry about your salary cap issues. And where I got things wrong was basically with the top 51 rule. The 51st ranked player on your roster counts X amount of dollars. And then when you sign another player, instead of that full, and then if that player makes more than the 51st guy on your roster, and I'll give you a concrete example to explain it in a second, but I do want to explain the rule first. Instead of taking that full salary away from your salary cap, as you normally would assume, instead it takes the difference between what that 51st guy makes and what that new addition has, because you're basically slotting in a new player, and that pushes down a new player to be that 51st guy on the roster ranking. So in the concrete example, for example, I think the 51st player on the Falcons roster makes $480,000, which is the veteran minimum, I think, for a first-year player in the NFL this year in 2018. And so if the Falcons were to go out and sign a player that cost $1 million, instead of saying, oh, well, that takes $1 million away from their salary cap, instead that $1 million gets slotted into the top 51, wherever that is. I think, you know, currently that would be like around like 26, because that's what Kamal Ishmael makes, about $1 million. And so instead that now pushes the 50th current guy down to the 51st spot, and the current 51st guy out and no longer counts against the salary cap. So instead of saying that full $1 million is subtracted from the Falcons salary cap pool, what they have, instead it's the difference of that $1 million versus the $480,000, which is what the 51st guy made. So instead of the full million getting subtracted, you're actually subtracting only $520,000 from the Falcons salary cap. And where I got this wrong is in talking about the Falcons rookie pool, which when you add up all six of their draft picks, they're going to count about $5.18 million, so $5.2 million against their salary cap this year based off of Over the Cap's estimations, overthecap.com. Go check it out. It is the definitive source for salary cap information if you want to find out about league-wide and whatnot. $5.18 million or $5.2 million, instead of subtracting that full amount from the Falcons salary cap, as I said on Friday, instead what you're going to have is it's going to be subtracted from the cumulative amount of the bottom six players on the Falcons. So guys that are 56 through 51 on their salary cap currently are going to be moved off of their salary cap and no longer will count against their salary cap after they sign all six of their rookies, and those six rookies are going to get slotted in wherever they are in that top 51. And so currently the Falcons' bottom six players currently on their roster, those guys 46 through 51, count a cumulative amount of $3.105 million. So you basically you're taking 5.2 minus 3.1, and in reality, you're only subtracting about $2.1 million from the Falcons' salary cap by signing their rookies. So when the Falcons were able to free up the money for Matt Ryan, which was a little bit shy of $4 million, instead, now they're going to be able to take that additional and take about $2 million of that additional cap space in addition to the $1.3 million that they had prior to. And they're going to take about $2.1 million of that to sign their rookies and still have additional cap space left over. And then as we talked about on Friday, they're going to get additional cap space from the Lavine Toilolo cut come June 2nd. And if they get a Jake Matthews contract deal extension done before training camp, they'll get additional cap space from that, presumably. As I said, I estimated on Friday that that money will be about $2.5 million if you assume he gets a very, very comparable contract to what Nate Solder signed this past offseason with the New York Giants. Now, I just threw a whole bunch of information at you. I hope you guys were able to stay with me on that. But basically, using now more accurate revised information, we can presumably estimate that after the Falcons have given Matt Ryan this extension and after they sign their rookies, the Falcons will have about like $3.15 million or so after they sign the rookies, and then they'll get an additional $3.5 million from the Toilolo cut. And so you're talking about $6.6 million around roughly money in terms of what they have to work with between training camp. And again, if they get that Jake Matthews deal done, and assuming there's going to be another $2.5 million in addition, you're talking about close to about $9 million in terms of cap space where the Falcons have to work with between now and camp. So the Falcons do have some room to work with if they want to go out and make additional signings between now and the start of training camp. As I discussed on Friday, I do think they need to go out and get another D tackle. I don't necessarily think it's going to be Jonathan Hankins. We'll see. I could be wrong about that. There is a possibility that they could sort of fit in a Jonathan Hankins size contract, you know, sort of a one-year prove-it deal for him if they, you know, can sort of negotiate the right point. But I think I said it on Friday's episode, but Hankins basically got $10.5 million for the Colts last year. And based off of how his offseason went a year ago, with his agents, the infamous Carl Poston, where they are basically going to hold out till they get to their price point, which is what happened with Hankins last offseason and why he signed so late about 2 weeks prior to the draft. I don't expect them to go on a budget. I assume they're going to want a similar amount of money. So if the Falcons did go out and get Hankins, pretty much all their cap space would be evaporated at that point, and then they would have to then try to find ways to save additional $2 or $3 million going into the 2018 regular season. So I don't necessarily, as I think I said on Friday, I wouldn't necessarily hold your breath that the Falcons are going to go out and get a guy of Jonathan Hankins' caliber, but who knows? You know, I didn't think they would be able to afford a Dontari Poe last offseason. They were able to figure that out. So I wouldn't say it's impossible. I just wouldn't think it's likely. So I think instead what we'll see it is the Falcons go out and get a depth signing, a guy that can play that three technique in the base defense, give them valuable run snaps, which will then allow them to keep Grady Jarrett fresher so that he won't have to play that three technique beside Deidre Sinnott in the base defense. And I think that will help Grady Jarrett be fresher for the season. That'll help Jack Crawford be fresher for the season as well. So I think, as well as Deidre Sinnott. So I think they need 4D tackles. They only really have three. I sort of dismissed guys like Justin Zimmer and Garrison Smith last year. I have since watched a little bit of film of those guys from Smith last year with the Seahawks, Zimmer a little bit from the preseason last summer. Those guys are a little bit better than I probably seem to give them credit for. Garrison Smith is actually a decent player based off of what he did with the Seattle last year, but I don't necessarily think you can count on either one of those guys to give you those valuable snaps. So I do think the Falcons do need to sign a D tackle. Who that player is going to be, whether that's a Terrell McClain, who they've recently been connected to, Cedric Thornton, a Jonathan Hankins, whoever else is out there, Courtney Upshaw, Ataba Rubin, who knows? But I do think they need to probably make that move before training camp just to give them another body at that spot and bolster that position. Outside of that, I don't necessarily expect the Falcons to make any major signings between now and training camp. They might add a fullback in the event that there are two rookies in Luke McNick and Daniel Marks, and you might even throw Jake Rowe in, the H-back from Boise State, in that conversation. If those guys are less than impressive at the rookie minicamp later this week or next week or whenever that is, May 10th, May 11th or something like that. I can't do math in my head. and I think they could sign a fullback, re-sign a Derek Coleman, or sign somebody else out there. You know, they showed interest in who was the Steelers fullback 2 years ago, Will Johnson, I think, last offseason. So maybe they revisit that. Again, I'm not going to sit here and make predictions about who the Falcons may or may not sign, because they zig when you think they're going to zag. So I have no idea who they'll pick up, and I, you know, if they pick up somebody at all. So that's mainly the information I want to correct. I hope you guys got what I was saying with the top 51 rule. I hope you guys got what I was saying with their salary cap situation. We'll talk a little bit more about the Matt Ryan deal in a bit. But first, I want to plug Locked On NFL, hosted by Matt Williamson, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find info on all 32 teams, not just the Atlanta Falcons. Again, that's part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So we know a little bit more details about the Matt Ryan deal. We've already touched upon sort of the immediate cap savings that the Falcons were able to do by lowering his cap hit from $21.65 million to $17.7 million, freeing up almost $4 million in immediate cap space. Essentially what this deal is, when you look at the structure of it, all the guaranteed money for Matt Ryan is due in the first 4 years through the 2021 season. And so essentially, basically, there's an additional guarantee, a portion of his 2021 salary is guaranteed if he's on the roster at the beginning of next season on the third day of the league year in 2019, which is basically pretty much going to happen unless, you know, Matt Ryan gets raptured in the next, you know, 11 months or whatever the case may be. So that's pretty much going to be guaranteed to happen. So those first 4 years are going to be pretty much guaranteed. The Falcons really can't get out of the contract until after the 2021 season, so 2022. I think Matt Ryan will be turning 37 in May of 2022, if I'm not mistaken. And that's about the age where you typically normally would expect most franchises. Like, I think that was about the age where Matt Hasselbeck sort of stopped being a viable starter in the NFL. That's about the age that what Drew Brees was a couple of years ago when the Saints started giving him those year-by-year contracts, as they have done the last couple of years, if I'm not mistaken. So I think that's a viable age for the Falcons to sort of have to then, you know, make a new decision about what they want to do with Matt Ryan's contract after that point. My expectation is they won't get rid of him, but who knows what happens over the next 4 years. I won't pretend to have an idea. But, you know, educated guess, law of averages sort of thinking, my expectation is the Falcons will then either decide to give him a new sort of like long-term contract, which will either then be like a 2 or 3 year deal in reality. Similar to this deal, it's a 6 year deal, a 5 year extension, but it's really a 4 year contract and they'll have to make adjustments. Or they will do what the Saints have done with Drew Brees the last couple of years, which is give him a series of 1 or 2 year deals to basically finish out his career in Atlanta at that point. So we'll see how that goes. No idea how that's going to go, but that's basically this contract basically guarantees Matt Ryan another 4 years in Atlanta. And, you know, this is going to be essentially their 4 year window, if you want to put it in those phrases, as far as their Super Bowl chances. That's really what it does for the Falcons, you know, and we talked a little bit about Julio Jones when we talked about Calvin Ridley last week in terms of where his future is. And you look at Julio Jones, he's, what, 28, 29 at this point. We saw sort of Roddy White's performance really fall off around, you know, after that 2013 season, right? Roddy White's age was his last really viable year as a high-end number one receiver or a competent number one receiver was that 2013 season where he was 32. He turned 32 that year. Julio Jones is currently 29. And so that's one of the reasons why I've discussed that there's a possibility that we're only going to get maybe two more peak years of Julio Jones. And what I mean by those peak years, I'm talking about Julio Jones being in consideration for being the best wide receiver in the league. I know everybody listening to this podcast considers him to be the best wide receiver. I know there's a sizable contingent of fans in Western Pennsylvania that don't think so. And then, you know, who knows where people all across the rest of the country and the world sort of lie in that debate. I'm sure there's a pocket of fans in the New York boroughs that think that neither Antonio Brown or Julio Jones. So that's a conversation for another day. But, you know, basically where universally Julio Jones is considered an elite receiver. I use that term elite in terms of how I value elite, where you can make a strong, compelling argument that that player is the best player at his position. I think there's no denying that Julio Jones is an elite receiver. He's probably, other than Alex Mack, probably the only other, at least by my definition, of elite player in the league. I'm sure some people would say Deion Jones is that. I'm sure some people will say Keanu Neal qualifies. Some people might say Grady Jarrett qualifies. Some people might say Devontae Freeman qualifies. And of course, Matt Ryan qualifies under that sort of definition of elite, where you're making the case that he is arguably the best player at his position in the league. We could have made that Patrick DeMarco was an elite fullback as well. Got to drop a Patrick DeMarco mention. It's been a couple of days and weeks since we had one on this podcast, so I got to hit that quota. Go ahead and drink if you are so inclined, if that's your drinking game. I do wonder a little bit about sort of whether Julio Jones is going to have a similar sort of downfall of similar, you know, if you can call it that, to what Roddy White had. We know Roddy White's career was sort of cut short due to injury, and we do know that essentially the human body is not ideally suited to play football long term because it is a very physical sport. And we know Julio Jones has dealt with a number of injuries. Other quote unquote elite wide receivers have been able to play well into their mid 30s, 34, 35, 36, and be still sort of some version of the elite receiver that they were previously known as. You look at a player like Andre Johnson, like his last year as a number one receiver in Houston was at age 33. That year he went to Indianapolis and sort of fell off a cliff, was his age 34 season. So, you know, it's around that age where you can sort of expect a decline for Julio Jones. I guess for me, the question with Julio Jones is because of the nagging injuries, because of the body's inability to recover as quickly, that's really what was the downfall of Roddy White, was when he was 27 and 28, those nagging knee injuries and ankle injuries and hamstring injuries, he could have got through them. And we saw him try to do that in 2013. It did not work. We saw him deal with the knee injury that really limited his ability to create separation in 2014. And by the time we got to 2015, those injuries had had a cumulative effect and he was no longer a viable starting wide receiver at that point in time. And you do wonder if that's going to be an issue with Julio Jones in the coming years. My thought process when we talk about that four-year window is whether or not we're going to see that happen to Julio Jones at some point in that four-year window that now we have Matt Ryan for. And that's where you sort of expect a player like Calvin Ridley to have to pick up the slack for him. And that's going to be the big question about Calvin Ridley's career, is that if and when that occurs with Julio Jones over the next 4 or 5 years, again, if we're assuming that he's going to be on a similar track as an Andre Johnson and sort of the last sort of viable year where he is a high-end wide receiver for Andre Johnson, at least, was the age 32 season. Then he had a down year, but still had close to 1,000 yards in that 2014 season when he was age 33. If you wonder if Julio Jones is going to be on a similar track, you know, Andre Johnson was not, immune to the injury bug throughout his career. So they're a good comparison, I think, Julio Jones and Andre Johnson. I'm sorry if I'm meandering all over the place and rambling a little bit. But if you think Julio Jones is on a similar track, and so around age 32, age 33, which will be about, you know, three, 4 years from now, He's going to be on a decline. Is Calvin Ridley going to be in a position to pick up the slack? That's going to be, to me, the big question about Calvin Ridley's long-term potential here in Atlanta. The hope is that he will be. I think there's reason to believe that, assuming he can also avoid the injury bug over the course of his career, and that was something we discussed a little bit on his scouting report episode that I did last week. You know, there is a little bit of a question about that given sort of his slighter build. Again, who knows what the future, he could wind up, you know, not missing a game over the next 8 years, or he can wind up missing all the games over the next 8 years. Who knows at this point? But I think that's going to be the big question. And sort of if Ridley is not able to do that, that's going to have a significantly deleterious effect to the Falcons sort of Super Bowl window, I think, if we're talking about those things. And really the only thing that's going to really pick up the slack, in my humble opinion, I don't expect them to be able to rely on their running game like that. You know, unless they land a dominant running back over the next 2 or 3 years, because, again, I don't necessarily expect Devontae Freeman to be able to give them what he has given them the last couple of years over that four-year period, given his concussion history, his injury history, and the fact that running backs typically start to decline around age 27, 28. And I think Devontae is, what, 25, 26 at this point in time. So I think the point I'm trying to make is I think the real question is going to be about whether the defense is going to be able to ascend to that highest level. And we're going to talk about that and more in just a sec. But I want to plug LockedOnSports.com, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find all the content dealing with the NFL, NBA, and now Major League Baseball. Again, that's LockedOnSports.com, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So the question with the defense is, can they reach that elite level? And, you know, again, I'll use the term elite, but that top five or so level, where they are now a legitimately top five defense, and not just sort of in terms of only allowing, giving up points. We know that, you know, not to say that scoring defense is a misleading stat, because it is probably the most important stat in terms of winning football games, obviously. If you don't allow as many points as you score, you're going to win a lot of football games. That's a very basic rule of NFL. But you can't necessarily say that just because a team is ranks highly on the scoring defensive scale, that they're a great defense. I mean, I know many Falcon fans would disagree with this point based off of their finishing, what, in the top 10 last year in scoring defense. But it's funny to me because you had a year before, people were basically saying the Patriots defense was a fraudulent defense, even though they were number one in scoring defense going into that Super Bowl game because they hadn't played anybody, which was factually true. But it's one of those things where, like, as I've explained in previous episodes of this podcast, I don't necessarily just look at one stat to judge a defense. I try to look at five or six stats, including points allowed, yards allowed, third down conversions allowed, red zone defense, defensive passer rating, which I think is, if you're going to focus on one stat for your pass defense, typically defensive passer rating, that correlates the most to, you know, winning games than anything in terms of pass defense. You look at rushing attempts against, rushing yards allowed, yards per carry. Of course, you look at completion percentage, touchdowns allowed, turnovers created, turnover margin, all those factors. Again, all of them go into the pot. And if you typically are good in the majority of those categories, if not all of those categories, you are legitimately a good defense. The Falcons are good in some of those areas, not so good in other of those areas. And we'll sort of see whether or not they can sort of rise up, as it were. Don't often get to incorporate that into the podcast naturally, but if they can sort of rise up in some of those defensive categories over the next 3 or 4 years, where they have sort of continue to have sort of quote unquote peak Matt Ryan and potentially peak Julio Jones, whether that defense can be a peak level NFL defense, then I think they can still have a legitimate shot at winning a Super Bowl in that period of time. And sort of that's what the Matt Ryan contract. So, you know, even though we can have debates and conversations about what is sort of the fallout of the Matt Ryan deal, whether or not they'll be able to retain all of their quote unquote core pieces. And we can have debates about who is in that core, Deion Jones, Vic Beasley, Keanu Neal, Grady Jarrett, Jake Matthews, whoever, what pieces are within that core. We can have debates about that. And I think primarily they'll be able to keep a significant number of those players I just rattled off and get them signed to second-level contracts. But it's more the mid-tier guys that I think will make up a big difference. And I do think some of the older veterans that are on the wrong side of 30 now, the Alex Max, the Andy Levitris, the Mohamed Sanus, the Ryan Schraders, among others, as well as some of their depth guys on defense like Brooks Reed and whatnot, and Derek Shelby. Some of these guys will have to be moved on from. I think the Falcons have already done a good job replacing, potentially lining up players to replace some of those guys, like Calvin Ridley with Mohamed Sanu and Isaiah Oliver with a Robert Alford, et cetera, et cetera. Ito Smith with a Tevin Coleman. We'll see if Duke Riley can be that to a Devondre Campbell. Among others, we'll see if Devontae Casey can be that to a Rico Allen if they lose some of those pieces. So that's going to be something that we'll have to watch over the coming years. And I think the negative, if there is one, for the Matt Ryan contract is it means that the Falcons won't have as much flexibility with their salary cap in the coming years. We've seen that sort of bear out over the last couple of years and the last couple of off seasons, but there'll probably be less flexibility with their salary cap. So you won't be able to see this team do what many Falcon fans want them to do every March and go out and go on this spending spree and supplement their draft choices with free agent signings, mid-level and upper-level free agent signings like a Jonathan Hankins. And so they'll have to do it more with low-level signings and free agency like we see with a Brandon Fusco, like we see with a Justin Bethel, as well as having a much smaller margin for error when it comes to their draft selections. So those are going to be the big questions for the Falcons moving forward. Obviously, because of their draft success in recent years, the expectation is that they will continue to draft successfully. But again, that margin for error becomes a little bit smaller. And where it really makes a difference is, you know, you have guys, these one contract players. I'll use this to illustrate my final point. But you have these one contract players like a Tevin Coleman, who in presumably assuming that he continues to play at a high level in 2018, and you assume that he's going to be a one contract level, one contract player, which is probably a safe assumption, not a guarantee, as we've discussed previously on this podcast, but a fairly safe bet at this point in time. You get three really productive years from Tevin Coleman in that one contract, in that four-year period, where you get, you know, over 1,000 yards of offensive production in 20, about almost over 1,100 yards in 2016. You got close to 1,000 in 2017. You're expecting to get a similar number of 1,000 or so in 2018 as well before he's finally done. So I think the whole notion that the Falcons will wind up getting nothing when Tevin Coleman walks, I think is a sort of a silly, sort of naive perspective on it, because you got, like, you know, almost 4,000 yards of production in 4 years from him. So you got something from him, you know, in terms of, you know, you don't necessarily need to try to get a second or third round pick in the future years in order to get that. And you do wonder, like with Ito Smith, if he's the guy that's going to be pegged to be that Tevin Coleman replacement, are you going to get 1,000, you know, that sort of level of production from him coming off the bench as you did with Tevin Coleman over the next 4 years? That remains to be seen. You do wonder if Ito Smith is going to be closer on that spectrum. If Tevin Coleman is on one end of the spectrum where you get a highly productive one contract player, the opposite end of that spectrum where you get a lesser productive, not a non-productive, but you get a Justin Hardy type of player, where we will see now with the selection of Calvin Ridley, the expectation is that the Falcons aren't going to necessarily get the maximum amount of Justin Hardy that they could have gotten in 2018 had they not made that selection. And you do wonder the presence of guys like Mohamed Sanu as well as others and Taylor Gabriel the last couple of years has limited how much they could have gotten out of Justin Hardy as well. So you do wonder if Ito Smith is going to be on that end of the spectrum. You know, hopefully he's somewhere closer to the Tevin Coleman side than the Justin Hardy side. But where that matters is if they don't get that level of production out of them, even if you're, you know, you're adequately replacing these guys in the draft, there is a net loss in terms of what you're getting from each of those draft picks than what you were getting in previous years. So there's going to be a lot more one contract guys, just because the Falcons are going to have to pay, you know, quite a bit of money for guys like Keanu Neal and Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones, among others. But you still want to get the most out of those one contract guys like a Devondre Campbell, like a Tevin Coleman, hopefully with an Austin Hooper as well, among those other players. You hope that they can get more out of Wes Schweitzer moving forward when they're, you know, and plug him into one of those starting guard spots if and when Andy Levitris retires next year, if and when the team decides to move on from Brandon Fusco in 2 years, whatever the case may be, you still hope they can get another 16 or more starts out of Wes Schweitzer that are capable starts and to get the maximum out of them. And so those are going to be the issues that the Falcons are going to have to deal with the draft, where they're going to have to be able to maximize those middle round picks that they're often not going to be able to resign to second contracts to get the most out of them. And it's the same applies to guys like Duke Riley, as I mentioned earlier. So those are going to be the big questions. Only time will tell. I can't sit here and say that the Falcons will definitely get the most out of those picks, or they definitely won't get the most out of the picks. That's why we sit here and we wonder about these things. And if they do, then the Falcons, I think, will be able to continue to play at a high enough level to potentially win a Super Bowl in the next 4 years, that they have Matt Ryan and presumably a Julio Jones, as well as a high performing defense, if they're able to get, you know, the most out of guys like that, in the sort of the second tier players that aren't the core pieces on their defense, like a Devondre Campbell and a Deidre Sinnott, among others. So those are the things we're going to be looking forward to. These are the things that we will be constantly discussing on this podcast in the coming months and or years. And so we'll figure it all out until then, guys. I hope you guys have a much clearer idea of what the salary cap situation is, as well as sort of the obstacles that the Falcons are going to have to overcome over the next couple of years. I think they're in a position to do so. So I don't want anybody to come out of this feeling pessimistic about the Falcons' chances, but it's not a guaranteed success just because they've been successful the last couple of years. It's not necessarily, as we see with a team like the Seattle Seahawks, early draft success does not guarantee long-term draft success. And you got to hit on those picks. And if you don't, it becomes problematic, as we've seen with the Seattle Seahawks the last couple of years. So that will be the big unanswered questions for the Falcons. And, you know, if you guys stay locked on the Falcons on this podcast, then we will try to answer those questions as they unfold in the coming months and years. So that's it, guys. If you want to get your feedback into me, you can do so on Twitter at FalFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. You can also check us out on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. You can also send an email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com, as well as leave a comment on LockedOnFalcons.com, as well as FalFans.com, where the show is posted daily. Again, we'll be doing an Isaiah Oliver scouting report at some point later this week. I don't have an exact day as of this recording, but that will come out later this week. And, of course, you guys, you know, we'll find more content dealing with the Falcons in the coming months. We'll talk more about, we'll do what we did last offseason at some point and get into these undrafted free agents, probably after we get through the rookies and whatnot, when I have time to sit down and watch those guys. That'll be something we do in June. And, of course, you guys can send in your requests to be on future fan talks over the course of the summer by sending an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com as well. And until then, guys,
you are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.